quotes, infused with the scent of potpourri, films we commit to memory. Crossing the felt ropes, watching from home on my TV, looking at all my eyes can see, they tell me I view obsessively.
Hello and welcome to The Obsessive Viewer. We're a weekly podcast that reviews one or two new release titles every episode with an occasional free-for-all segment at the end that we call Potpourri. You can find more of our work, including my written reviews, full episode show notes, and the complete backlog of our episodes at obsessiveviewer.com. You can also write into the show by emailing me at matt@obsessiveviewer.com. And if you'd like to support us and get access to hundreds of exclusive episodes, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/obsessiveviewer, where you can get access to content at any of our tier levels on a recurring monthly subscription basis, or you can buy individual collections a la carte in the Patreon shop section. Recently on Patreon, I concluded my Flanagan Fridays reviews of The Haunting of Hill House, and I did Oculus. I'm a little bit behind. I'm going to start The Haunting of Bly Manor this week, and very excited about that. I also am in the process of relaunching my solo podcast anthology, which is all about the Twilight Zone and classic science fiction. Right now, I have one special video up on Patreon. That's one of the bonus reviews for an upcoming episode of anthology, just to show that, hey, I'm actually doing this thing. So that's all at patreon.com/obsessiveviewer. I'm your host, Matt Hurt, and you can find me on social media at Obsessive Viewer. And in our featured review this week, we'll be reviewing the new MonsterVerse film. I don't know why I said it like that. From Adam Wingard, Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, which opened in theaters on March 29th. And then for the secondary review this week, I'm going to be reviewing the recent Amazon Prime romantic comedy Upgraded, which was released on Amazon Prime back on February 9th. And joining me this week for my featured review is Mr. Brent Luthold, making his return to the podcast after a couple of weeks. Brent, how's it going? Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me again.
Of course. Yeah. Thank you for joining me. Kind of short notice. I had marked down Tiny had been interested in reviewing Godzilla X Kong. And then last week I was talking to him, and then he was like, oh, yeah, I'm busy with all of this stuff this week. And I was like, oh, OK, yeah, that's fine. So I was like, OK, that's fine. So thank you for joining me on pretty short notice. And I'm looking forward to chatting with you about Godzilla X Kong. Subtract minus Godzilla X Kong minus one. yeah, okay, so Godzilla, it is Godzilla X Kong. It's not like Godzilla by Kong or Godzilla times Kong or anything, right?
Yeah, I think it's just like Godzilla Kong the New Empire. That's the thing, that's technically the way it's pronounced.
Okay,
like you don't pronounce the X, but I know that's kind of weird. So I think if you have a title like that, I can't think of any other movie titles that are really like that, with the X meaning like they're together, like collaborating. So I think whatever you say kind of goes.
Yeah. Well, we'll call it Godzilla X Kong. But before we get into all of that, I do want to give you the floor to let people know where they can find your work online, awakenthedark.com. I spoiled what you were about to say, and what you've got going on. What have you been up to recently over there?
Yeah, I have written reviews of Godzilla, Godzilla Kong, Godzilla X Kong, whatever, the New Empire, and Immaculate. I did that last week as well. I guess we talked about Love Lies Bleeding. So yeah, that kind of is about as far back as it goes. Last time I said I was going to be doing something for Midwest Film General in April, I kind of got behind on things with work-life balance, so I'm not going to be doing that.
Oh, that's too bad.
I still don't want to say what it was because I don't know when it's going to come out and blah, 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 that stuff. But my understanding is they have quite a few submissions for the one that they're going to do in April. So I felt bad bowing out. I did. But at the same time, it's... I think they're generally covered, and so regretfully I won't have anything for that, but I'll have reviews of Monkey Man, I think, is coming out next week, and oh boy, I forget, Abigail, I think is
Abigail's after, or Civil War. Yeah.
Yeah. Civil War. Hopefully I'll be able to get someone in the studio. Nice. The podcast for that. That would be awesome.
Nice.
But I'm always like eternally hopeful that's going to happen, but we'll see.
that was the other news thing I was going to bring up. That's actually a really good segue. Awesome. Civil War. Alex Garland said something to the effect of, he doesn't foresee him directing again. He is kind of light retiring from directing because he lost the passion for filmmaking, I guess. which is definitely something. I think you said in our chat, you said, said like that's great right before Civil War comes out. That's a great thing to say.
Yeah. A24 is sending an email like, oh, thanks for the promotion. That's awesome.
What do you make of that? And what are your expectations for Civil War? Are you excited for it?
I'm excited for it. I don't know that the announcement, it was probably something that he said like errantly. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if in a couple of days we see a clarification or a retraction or something, but regardless, I don't think it's really a reflection on Civil War, but you know, that's how PR stuff works. It's the optics. It's not what was said. It's what was, you know, interpreted. So, I thought the timing of it was really funny, but, who knows? I mean, if Civil War is his last movie, he'll have had four movies he directed under his belt. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's like, he wants to get back to writing. I don't know if that's what he feels like. Maybe he wants to just focus on that. You know, I don't really know exactly what the intention is kind of behind what he was saying. So we'll see, you know, in terms of that.
Yeah. But I agree. And I would be all for him going back to just writing. Cause like Sunshine and 28 Days Later are two of my favorite movies of all time, like incredible movies. But what's interesting about it, and I need to like look into the context of it and everything, but like it's so weird because like he has like, I think the movie's called Warfare that he's co-directing with someone that's coming out like in a year or two. And like it's just weird for the news cycle to run with that when it's like, well, he also has stuff in the works. Like it's not like, I don't know. It's weird.
Was he a showrunner on Devs?
Yes. That's right. I always forget about Devs, and I need to revisit that because, man, I really liked it when I saw it. I think he was like a pretty much a controlling force of Devs, like showrunner, and I want to say he directed a fair amount of them, if I'm remembering correctly. But yeah, that was good. Did you see Devs?
I didn't, no. Okay. But I mean, again, the timing, not just before his movie, but I mean, a movie that's tracking quite well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Civil War almost certainly will be his highest grossing movie in terms of the four that he's directed.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's just sort of like why the timing? I don't really know.
Yeah.
But regardless, we'll see how everything plays out. I'm sure, you know, we haven't seen the last of him in some creative sense. You know, I'm sure he'll still kind of be out there in the film industry, whether it's directing or writing or doing something else totally unrelated to those.
Yeah.
But I think he's one of those guys that I think he'll be around for a bit.
Oh, so. I agree. And he's also going to be working on 28 Years Later with Danny Boyle. They're coming back for that. So that's going to happen, and I'm very excited about it. And he did write and direct all 8 episodes of Devs. So yeah.
Nice.
But that's interesting. We'll see what happens. I'm definitely a big Garland head, I guess. I really like what he's put out. The other thing I want to talk about before we get into the review is Amazon Video. this was like last Wednesday or Thursday. There was a pricing glitch on several movies on Amazon Prime, where you could buy for free, 2001: A Space Odyssey and a bunch of other ones. Ernest Saves Christmas.
That was the one that stung the most, really.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There was like all told like 5 or 6 titles, including like The Fugitive. That was a big one. And so people bought them. I bought them, and then a day or two later, Amazon was like, you know, this was done in error, so we canceled it. You don't have these movies anymore. We need to recoup our losses because, you know, we're just a plucky upstart. So we both felt the brunt of this, Brent. How did you cope with it, and what are your feelings about this this tragic turn of events for our respective digital media collections?
Our digital media libraries, yeah. Yeah, I'm still coping with it. Mm. Yeah, one of them was A Christmas Story, which I already had. Yeah. But then it was like The Replacements, which I was even on the fence of even getting it, but I did. Because, you know, I haven't seen Gene Hackman in a new movie in a while.
Sure.
And that movie's like 20 years old, over 20 years old. But like You, Me, and Dupree, I didn't even pull the trigger on.
Oh, I forgot. That
these were just such random movies. It wasn't one studio. Like, I have no idea what actually happened. But regardless, yeah, I saw posts about it. And, you know, just taking a step back in terms of the context, you know, this sort of stuff happens. Yeah. Like, iTunes has this stuff happen. I bought, like, the entire, like, a 30-movie, like, DC animated library for like $8 or something.
Jesus.
And it's clearly like, you know, an error.
Yeah.
The problem with that was, man, that was really borderline because like I'm never gonna watch this.
Right.
Like never. But you'll get stuff that's like, oh, you know, bundles of like 20 movies or like $10 or something like that. You'll get stuff like that or whatever. So Vudu, which is, I guess, now Fandango at Home, even though the branding behind that is still really weird. And, like, iTunes. For clarification, like, this stuff has happened with both of those before. And I've never seen this where they literally yoink it out of your library.
Me neither.
I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
So this happened with Amazon, obviously. Mm-hmm. And because of Movies Anywhere, which is basically a service where you can tie all of your media libraries together between Amazon, Vudu, iTunes, YouTube, even, I think, technically, like, because you can buy and rent stuff through there. You tie them all together, and basically you own the movies across all those platforms, right? Mm-hmm. So you buy it on Amazon, then you simultaneously have it on Vudu, iTunes, all the stuff.
Yep.
So anyway, so getting into the context then of what you said, so there are these, like, six or seven movies that you can, you know, pay $0 for, technically. Mm-hmm. They show up in your Amazon library, you have them on Vudu, all these other platforms and everything. So I didn't really think much of it. You kind of just catch as catch can. You kind of shoot first, ask questions later when it comes to these kind of pricing errors, quite frankly. I mean, I'll call them what they are because that's what it is.
Yep.
And so that's what I did. And yeah, I was shocked, I think, the day after to find that they were gone from like my Vudu library and Amazon and like all those. And then I got an email from them maybe a couple days after saying, like, regarding your order, like, it was a pricing error and, like, we refunded you $0. It was, of course, such a generic thing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, I don't know. I've never seen it before where a company has literally just, like, yoinked it. I don't even know how they did that with Movies Anywhere.
Yeah, it's really, I don't know. I want to say my assumption is that because I don't know anything about the technology of it or anything, but my assumption is that since it was purchased through Amazon, like that's the primary location of it. So like, I would assume that it's like when you see it on like Vudu or Movies Anywhere or any of those other ones where it's linked to it from Amazon, my assumption is like you don't have like it's not like Vudu has given you the license for that. It's more like Amazon says like, oh, it's okay, so we'll match that or something. I don't know. I'm talking completely out of my ass, but what's crazy about that is that this, like you said, this has happened before with other retailers. This is stuff that has happened, but it's not been something that's been just completely yoinked from us. It's even happened with Amazon Prime. Like I still own a digital copy of The End of the Tour, with Jesse Eisenberg and Jason Segel.
Jason Segel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I still own that. It was on sale for $0 once I saw someone tweet about it, and I was like, oh, I'll buy it, sure. And I did, and it's still there. And it's just like, I don't know. It's just so weird. Like, and I'm sure, like, with the way that the internet goes, like, it's not anything that's going to rate too high in terms of the cultural conversation or anything, but it's like, why not just take the loss? Like, take the L, basically just eat the money that you lose over this amount of time that's people bought this, because it's Amazon. They can do that. Like, they can afford that. It's just, I don't know.
And again, like, I don't have an inside track on any of this, obviously, mm-hmm. but like Vudu, especially because I'm on there more, I'm not on iTunes, although
no, me neither.
The subreddits that I'm on, mainly just the Vudu subreddit, they'll post stuff for iTunes and then I'll do like Movies nice. Anywhere. But like Vudu, I'm pretty sure I'm not saying all of them, but I'm pretty sure there have been some where they've done the pricing errors intentionally.
Oh, really?
To just basically get people on the platform. Huh. They kind of think it's like teaser rates for stuff, right?
Yeah.
Where it's things like, Warner's or whatever it was. They had like a $20, 25 movie bundle. It's normally $199, mm-hmm. and they had it for $19.99, basically.
Oh, that's right. Jesus.
So, you know, with that stuff, I can't say for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at the movies like in a bundle like that. Personally, I think there's a lot of great picks. And mm-hmm. sometimes I've seen pricing errors where I've been like, nah, I don't really care. I don't even really want it for like literally like $0 in some cases. Like I said, you mean Dupree. Sorry, I have nothing against Owen Wilson, but don't necessarily need to see his face every time my media library. Because that's the thing is like you can't really curate a lot of this stuff too.
No.
Like when it's in your library, it's actually kind of hard to get it out.
Mm-hmm.
And like you can't manage it like you would a computer. Anyway, all that to say that I'm somewhat selective even on pricing errors of stuff that I pick. Having said that, you know, there's usually bundles more often than not. I'll sort of grab them. So there have been two camps on this. It's mm-hmm. one is the very like you didn't pay anything for it, nerd. Like you know, it's like you don't be mad. It's like don't be upset that they took back their thing or whatever.
Yeah,
it's like okay, that's a school of thought. Mm-hmm. You know, the other school of thought is like Amazon sucks. They should pay up. I'm definitely more in the second camp personally.
Yeah. Same here.
But to me, more, you know, whatever, depending on, I mean, subjectively, whatever, you can be on whatever side,
mm-hmm.
but on a more objective kind of just sort of like what was learned or whatever, you know, for me, it's just a reminder that like, you don't, you know, the kind of conversations that you don't own the thing unless you have the disc.
Yep.
And even that, I mean.
Yeah.
Who even knows moving forward if physical media is going to, you're going to have to. You know, you're going to have to check in with some DRM or something that's in real time. You know, I don't even want to speak that into being. But regardless, you know, you don't own it until you physically have it. So it just brought that home to me. And for me, I mean, like, it's really, I do not have a lot of movies on Vudu.
Mm.
Or just like digital copies of things, however you want to say it. And the vast majority of stuff is either stuff that I'll get for free because it's mm-hmm. $5.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have like a $5 promo, it's all, you know, right there. Or, you know, pricing errors. I mean, honestly, that makes up like 80 to 90% of what I own. Like I paid full price for like Tar and like mm-hmm. The Zone of Interest because I just wanted to see them or, you know, then I just wanted to have them, you know, and those are, I mean, everyone's, it's like, yeah, even if I have standard def screeners for those, like I just want to have them, like whatever.
Absolutely.
But like by and large, I don't pay like 20-25 bucks for a digital license for stuff very often at all.
Me neither. The last time I spent really anything on Vudu was like that deal that you had referenced. I think it was like the Warner Brothers 100 years whatever. Which that was an incredible deal. It was like, what, like $19, I think, for a whole bunch of movies. And I was like, yeah, okay, cool. But like, other than that, like I will basically only get digital copies if they, if I have that $5 promo from Fandango, and it's on sale for $5.
And that bundle that I referenced, that's the second time that that's happened with a Warner's bundle of 25. So that's why, I mean, I'm not trying to turn this into a conspiracy podcast, but I mean, why wouldn't Warner's be able to kick in and say, hey, 24 hours, let's throw it at a totally bogus price.
Yeah.
See what we get.
It would be really, I kind of wish that any retailer would have capitalized on it, or any distributor would have capitalized on it by being like, whoops, we accidentally set the price low. Why don't you guys go ahead and get this? Like, this hasn't, like, we won't take it away. We're not like greedy Amazon. We're not going to take it away. But yeah.
Well, and Vudu too. I mean, if you really think about it, like, let's see it from their perspective. Like, Vudu's competing against iTunes and Amazon. So, like, they probably kicked in stuff too. Now, none of this matters to you and me, as consumers. Yes. But whether it's, I mean, again, that's where I could see it, is like Warner's and Vudu, you know, working together and being like, you know, let's get some digital copies moved. Yeah. You know?
Let's get some viral marketing.
Just to clarify, I have no basis for any of this. I am literally just a dude who is on, you know, subreddits or whatever. And like I said, I mean, you know, this goes without saying. I'm sure you probably preach this on this podcast, but you know, it's like, you know, same goes with streaming. It's the same conversation.
Yeah.
You know, you're renting media, and that's fine. And that's and technically, see, that's where the delineation is for me. Mm-hmm. If I'm streaming something, like, I know I'm renting it. Like, that sucks, but that's the reality of it. If you have it physically, then you have it physically. And that, you know, government can't take it from you.
Right.
You know? But it's that whole tricky thing of what happened is in the middle. What happened to you and me and other people, you know, where it's like, you own it, but not really. And they changed that verbiage from you owned to you have.
Oh, that's right.
Which that's probably a bunch of lawyers got paid very well at the Vudu headquarters to suss out why, you know, owned versus have that privilege. So anyway, all that to say that's the tricky middle where it's like, oh, well, technically you own the license, but, you know, we just saw, like, they can yoink it, you know, like, you know, and what are you going to do about it other than argue with an AI bot at Amazon for 80 minutes, which I chose not to do. You know, and I know, hey, if you have the time, go for it. I don't care. I heard anything from like, they'll refund you $90 for this stuff versus like, they gave me like a $3 coupon and everything in between, or they told me to screw off, you know, like everything in between. So I'm just like, it's okay. Like, I'm just going to take the L and move on.
Like, to be clear, I was not mad about this or frustrated. Like, I could not care any less if I had those movies in my library or not. I think just the principle of the matter is that this mega huge company fucked up. And instead of just like taking that fuck up and like rolling with it, they decided to be greedy and pull it back. So I don't know, it was just frustrating, but it's funny though, kind of on the similar note, and then we can get into the review, of course, but the conversation about digital versus physical, and like, you never know if you actually like when you said that about who knows what the future holds about, you know, physical media. They could have like DRM scanners that you have to go through to watch your physical copies. That's a scary thought. But I also just had this like this dystopian future of like Amazon vans coming by and just breaking into people's houses and like going through like the order history and saying like, yo, you no longer have the rights to have this copy of Matilda on your shelf, so we're taking it back. And then I just had that image. But it's funny because I had a funny experience. Like when I have an essay going up on Midwest Film Journal for the series that we're not going to say what it is yet, because I don't know if they want us to say, but I have an essay going up. I'm very excited. It's one of my favorite movies of that genre. Wrote an essay about it, thought it was pretty good, excited for people to read it. But when I was rewatching it, like I was sitting down to rewatch it, and I was like, okay, I think I have this on Vudu. And I looked it up and no, I don't have it on Vudu. I'm like, okay, that's right. Cause I had seen it on sale for like $5 here and there. And I had like a code, but I was like, no, I'd rather have this movie instead. But I kept thinking, like, I thought for sure that I owned the physical copy. And like, I looked for it everywhere, couldn't find it. I ended up renting it on Vudu and watching it that way. And then, like 2 days ago, I was looking through like my stack of Blu-rays and stuff. And I was like, oh, there it is. The spine was not like pointed out or anything. So I spent $3 to rent it. So, but I did have one of those coupons, so it was actually free to rent it, but still.
Yeah. And I mean, that's, I mean, like the Fandango, like fan rewards, like I, especially with like that, First Omen promo they have, like, that's gonna be awesome, like getting three times stuff on showtimes for that, so that'll be cool. And honestly, I'll probably end up just getting random $5 things. And that's kind of it. I don't, other than that, I don't really even play a ton of Blu-rays. I'm in between that 4K Blu-ray stage on 4K TV right now. That's a whole other conversation, but but yeah, Amazon, what are you doing? I think that's, for me, that's like, I agree with that sentiment. That it's like you screwed up. Like, how many times? It's Amazon. They have trillions of products. Like, are they seriously gonna, like, and again, I know it's because it's digital and they can do it. And they're like, we're just gonna do it and we're gonna revoke the licenses and they're gonna deal with it. But like, with physical products, God knows, they probably have a ton of pricing errors or like whoopsie things that happen with physical products that they're not going to do anything with. So who knows? It's just annoying.
Yeah, it is. And for the listener, if you don't know, if you go to the theater a lot, or if you have like AMC A-List or Regal Unlimited, if you buy your tickets or you reserve your tickets through Fandango, they have a rewards program where every like five tickets, you get a free $5 coupon for either a movie ticket to go into the price of a movie ticket, or you can use it on Vudu. And so that's what we are talking about when we say that we have Vudu credits, where, like if we're not, if I don't see a movie in the theater 1 week, I will reserve three tickets through A-List and get credit for three tickets on Fandango rewards. And they're running a promotion this month, or at least the next couple of weeks. That's, if you buy tickets for the First Omen, you get like three times as many points. So that's going to be nice. So,
Yeah. And it's, I think it's typically four, like technically it's 500 points, but each ticket is 125.
That's right.
But then like, even in the summer, like they'll do double points. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like if you get two tickets, and again, the real bonus is like, we need to get kickbacks from Fandango for duping their system, I guess.
Right.
So there's like convenience fees, which through Regal, those aren't covered, but AMC A-List, those are covered.
Not. Interesting.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah. So Regal, that's why. And like everything with Regal, that's kind of one of the reasons I chose AMC, because you can do everything through Fandango and it links up. With Regal, they want you to use their app.
That's lame.
And they still charge like a 50-cent convenience fee even when you're using their app. It's stuff like that that I'm just like, I'll go to the AMC. It's closer to me.
Yeah.
I still go to the Regal too, but I know that it's like, they're going to screw me on convenience fees and stuff, but they have recliners.
That's fair. I don't remember the last time I went to a Regal. But anyway, we're an A-List family here on Obsessive Viewer Podcast.
Your entourage.
Yes. But yeah, I thought there was another thing I was going to say about all of that, but who knows? Well, we can go into our review now. Are you ready to talk Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire?
Let's do it.
All right. Awesome. So as is customary on the podcast, we're going to do a non-spoiler review followed by a spoiler review for Godzilla X Kong. To switch over to spoiler review, I will play a clip from the trailer. Check the show notes for timestamps to find ways to navigate around all of that. Those show notes are at obsessiveviewer.com/OV422 and in your details or notes section of your podcast app. So here we go. Godzilla X Kong premiered in theaters March 29th. The premise, according to IMDb, is Two ancient titans, Godzilla and Kong, clash in an epic battle as humans unravel their intertwined origins in connection to Skull Island's mysteries. Director was Adam Wingard, and writers were Terry Rossio, Simon Barrett, and Jeremy Slater. The movie stars Rebecca Hall, Brian Tyree Henry, Dan Stevens, Kaylee Hoddle, Alex Ferns, and Fela Chen. Now, Brent, before we get into our non-spoiler review, I just want to get your read on the MonsterVerse currently. So we've got Godzilla, Kong Skull Island, Godzilla King of the Monsters, Godzilla vs. Kong, and Monarch Legacy of Monsters. How many of these have you seen, and what's your position on it before going into Godzilla X Kong?
I've seen all five. I believe Godzilla came out on my 25th birthday.
Nice.
So saw that. I think I've seen all of them in theaters except Godzilla versus Kong, because that was 2021 and it premiered on Max. So I saw it there. Nice. But yeah, I think all the other ones I've seen in theaters. Yeah, honestly, I mean, I think it's ambitious. I mean, I sort of, looking back now, I have respect for what they tried to do in terms of the directors they tried to get for, like, Godzilla and Kong Skull Island and King of the Monsters. King of the Monsters is my favorite of the five. I am not nearly as much of a Godzilla head as our friend Evan Dossi, of course, right. Who is by far the biggest Godzilla person that I know.
By a large margin, yeah.
And it's not even close. And I can't even think of a number two. So of the five, I feel like that's the one that, I mean, as much as I can say got Godzilla right, but at least at the very, I think it got like the monster movie formula probably best of the five movies.
Is King of the Monsters?
King of the Monsters, okay. Yeah, which is technically the second like Godzilla movie in the MonsterVerse, and it's a standalone. Kong doesn't really have anything to do with that. There's, I think, a Monarch tie-in, but that's really it. But it's pretty much just him kind of going against the different titans, and it's a big kind of monster mash, but it's a lot of fun. I think that's the one that sort of I don't know, I think Michael Dougherty, I think, just got the formula right for that. And I mean, I looked back at the cast in that movie is insane. Even people that aren't in it very much, it's like insane how many big names they got for that movie that is still like, it's still a Godzilla movie. So I mean, let's face it, like, some people typically are coming there for the human characters.
Yeah, so. That's kind of where I'm at with that. Yeah, that's the one with Vera Farmiga. Yeah,
Charles Dance, I think, is the bad guy, and
oh, that's,
you know,
right.
Like Sally Hawkins is. I mean, it's just like crazy, like just the amount of people. I mean, you could say, I mean, I did in my review, like overqualified cast for sure. But anyway, So yeah, overall, I would say I generally like it. I think it's an experiment in kind of what a monster movie franchise can be.
Yeah,
I think.
So. I agree. I'm not too hot on all the movies, really. And I should ask, did you ever see Monarch on Apple TV Plus?
I have not seen Monarch, and I think there is an animated series on Netflix about Skull Island that I have
really
not seen either.
I didn't know that.
So, yeah.
I have seen all the movies. I haven't seen Monarch. I've been pretty hot and cold on this franchise. I do like Godzilla as a property. I really need to get back into watching the Criterion Collection I have of it, But I really like Godzilla. These movies just feel very inferior to the Godzilla movies that I've seen. But I've kind of turned a corner. It's interesting because the first Godzilla of this iteration of it came out in 2014. And then we got Kong Skull Island in 2017. And then King of the Monsters 2019 and Godzilla vs. Kong in 2021. What I found myself thinking while rewatching Godzilla versus Kong, I purposely rewatched Godzilla versus Kong like immediately before going to the theater because I'm so like, I've seen these movies, but I'm not as invested in the movies. Like, I don't remember much of the movies. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, they're big spectacles, but they don't leave a strong impression. But when rewatching Godzilla vs. Kong, I was just like, you know, it's interesting that here over the last 4 or 5 years or so, there has been a shift in blockbuster filmmaking and big tentpole releases in that comic book movies have waned considerably. And like, I have always been like an MCU stan. Like, those are movies that I am very, very much in, like, in, get a lot of enjoyment out of. But since Endgame, I don't, like, my interest has waned considerably. So there is like this void with me with big spectacle, sci-fi leaning, big blockbuster spectacles. And when rewatching Godzilla vs. Kong, I was like, yeah, I'm kind of into this, like, more so than I was before, like, when I first saw it, because it is filling that void. Unfortunately, like you kind of alluded to, the human characters don't really do much. Like, the human characters in this franchise are kind of not that interesting ever. And that is kind of the failure of the franchise for me. But in terms of spectacle, like, I was surprised at how much I really liked Godzilla vs. Kong. So I was primed to be lukewarm on Godzilla X Kong. yeah. So do you want to get into our non-spoiler review for Godzilla X Kong?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So, I'll get us kicked off if you don't mind. This, in kind of an extension of that thing, that word salad I just said about the MCU and everything, is that, and I'm not someone who likes to make this kind of critique or anything, but the thing that I really like about Godzilla vs. Kong and Godzilla X Kong is that they're both just shy of 2 hours long. And I think that that's really interesting and really telling of how they are approaching these movies, because you don't need like a big 2.5 pushing 3 hour movie when you're noticeably not diving into much beneath the surface in terms of the human characters or the backstory. And I shouldn't say that, because in Godzilla X Kong, they do dive into that a little bit, but it for me, it was more showing why they don't usually dive into that, because it was very kind of boring. And that's kind of my transition into saying that I thought that the first hour and a half of this movie was kind of a slog. There was some good stuff here and there, but it really kind of tried my patience. And then when we got to the big climactic battle sequence, it really felt like it didn't pay off the boredom I had in the first couple acts. That's kind of like my blanket statement about Godzilla X Kong. How'd you feel about the movie, non-spoilers?
Yeah, I liked it a little more than Godzilla versus Kong, but nice. I still don't think it's really, it's just not up to where, it's just not, this and Godzilla versus Kong just aren't as good as they could be. I think this is the experiment that they're sort of trying in terms of just like team up cinema, which of course like the MCU influences everything, and there's always universes and cinema, you know, and that's fine, and like there's nothing wrong with that, but fundamentally I just don't really think that, I'm not saying that Godzilla and Kong can't be in a movie together, I just don't, I think they've tried twice and it hasn't quite worked either time.
Yeah.
What I said in my Godzilla versus Kong review, I actually feel even more vindicated watching this movie, watching Godzilla X Kong, because I had said that they needed to do another Kong movie, another standalone Kong movie, to make their kind of universes make sense together.
Yeah.
And I think for me, like Godzilla versus Kong is just sort of like, I don't really think they allow those to mesh. And it's very much a Ballistic X versus Sever sort of situation where they're not, it's not really X versus Sever for a lot of that movie. And same for like Godzilla versus Kong, it's Godzilla and Kong versus Mechagodzilla, spoiler alert for Godzilla versus Kong, you know, towards the end, it's like, okay, they have their differences. And even in Godzilla X Kong, they still fight. But it's, you know, something brings them together, right? Which we get into spoilers. But regardless, I honestly still think that, like, after King of the Monsters, they should have done a Kong standalone.
Yeah.
And what the main, this is basically that the structure of Godzilla X Kong is, you know, you have the humans, they're doing their thing. You have Godzilla, he's doing his thing. And then you have Kong and he's doing his thing. Now, they're not equal timeline. It's not equal time given to each segment.
Right.
But the Kong stuff in Godzilla X Kong, I thought was by far the most interesting of the three.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the most, like, interesting storytelling that they're doing. And it's with apes. I mean, it's with ape characters. I actually haven't seen any of the new Planet of the Apes movies. But
oh, interesting.
I gathered that that's probably what the movies are, those movies are like the Kong aspect of this movie, with which we will talk about more, but
yeah,
that was my favorite part of Godzilla, you know, X Kong. So again, I come back to, like, I wish they had done this back in like 21.
Yeah.
And I think it would make putting those two characters, they would make that make more sense. And again, I just don't think it justifies, like, bring them together. And again, Adam Wingard's the one who directed these two. I don't think he has that knack for juggling these stories on this level.
Oh, definitely not. Definitely not.
Yeah.
And yeah, that is such a good point about there needing to be a Kong movie in between these last two movies, because the first half of this movie basically is a Kong movie. And like, the way that Godzilla versus Kong ends, it ends in such a way that, like, it leaves it open for a Kong standalone movie. Like, it's right there. Kong, Hollow Earth. Like, you have the movie right there. The tagline now is, like, learn how he got a toothache. And it's
eating
just
too much,
like,
candy. Yeah.
Yeah. and basically an inside, his hands look like this, so my hands can look like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. But yeah,
that's the tagline. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, I was invested in that, and I thought it was interesting in this movie, but you have like so much more focus on Kong, and then you get like basically interstitials of Godzilla on like his own little road trip going to get like radiation for, you know, purposes that happen in the third act. And like the balance of that doesn't work for me, like you kind of said. But also I would have liked a standalone Kong movie, but I would have liked a standalone Kong movie not directed by Adam Wingard, because I feel like there was, and this could have been just me, a noticeable like misinterpretation of the scale of Kong and the other apes in the movie. Like, there was, maybe it was because so much of it took place in Hollow Earth and the subterranean realm and what have you, but like I never really latched on to what, like, how big he is and how big these creatures are.
Right.
And that kind of just felt a little bit like it just lacked an immersion for me that I would have liked to have in this movie.
Yeah, well, like, if you go back to Skull Island, like, that's a movie where it is the Kong that we would think of that is batting down helicopters.
Yes.
And, like, there's that, you know, Apocalypse Now homage of, you know, him in front of, like, the sunset. And, like, you're right, there's so much more scale and, like, whatever, like, magnitude, all of his actions were in this. Yeah, it's in Hollow Earth, which... That's the whole thing about Hollow Earth is, like, I can't get the sense of, like, if it's supposed to be, like, magical. And but regardless, it's, like, you're right. Like, the scale is totally off. Like, the villain in this movie, you know, we'll talk about, is, like, it doesn't seem like he should put it, he would stand a chance against Kong.
Oh, no, not at all.
In terms of his size.
Yeah.
But, like, he does. And, yeah, he has some help. But, like, it physically, it just makes no sense proportion-wise. So, yeah.
Yeah, and even, like, his introduction was, like, in a pretty darkly lit set, and, like, that also kind of muddied the scale and how we perceive the size of these creatures. And it just equaled a bad time for me. Like, it just kind of, it really kind of took me out of the movie several times, and it's funny because I came into this movie wanting to be, like, invested in it, and, like, coming at it with like a newfound or renewed appreciation for Godzilla X Kong, thinking like, man, okay, this is going to be cool. Like I forgot that I was that interested in the last movie. And another reason why I was interested in that last movie that I found just sorely missing in this was the like color palette of Godzilla versus Kong. It's very vibrant and colorful. Mm-hmm. And like, it was gorgeous. And like here, we get a lot of foliage and like not a lot of colorful, like mesmerizing cinematography in this. And that was a huge letdown for me.
Aside from, I almost mentioned this in my review. Sorry, nice. Go ahead.
I was going to say, aside from Dan Stevens'
Hawaiian shirts,
yeah. But yeah, sorry, yeah. You almost said that in your review.
I was going to say this in my review, but I didn't want it to come across since I was already giving a negative review of like, oh, like film critic is pushing up his glasses on his nose talking about cinematography. But I am telling you, I saw this in IMAX 2D, I should say, which for some reason this is being released in 3D and IMAX 3D. No idea why they're still doing that. Avatar did it 15 years ago. We're still paying for it.
Yeah.
So regardless, I saw it in IMAX 2D, which I understand like is should be a pretty large like presentation, should be hypothetically like the highest quality like picture.
Right.
For some reason, the cinematography in this movie for large stretches, particularly when they're shooting the, like the humans, when it's actually stuff that's like that's actually there on set, is so. The lens that they're using or something is so the edges are extremely blurry where it's like really annoying. And so, they'll shift focus from one character to the other in the background, foreground, something like that. And it's like, I swear to God, it's like literally like almost nauseating. Jeez. And I don't know why. I assume that's a stylist choice. Don't really know. I did not enjoy it. And what I don't know is if that had to do with making the 3D like pop, if that's part of the, with the choice. I don't know. I can't say, but this is the same DP that shot Godzilla versus Kong and like The Mummy. So like, I don't know. Maybe he's just like, I don't know. Maybe they're going for some kind of like blockbuster look that I don't really understand. But all I can say is like, I noticed this time and I did not like it. So whatever they're doing with, and again, I'm speaking mainly of the scenes pretty much of the scenes of something that's like the human stuff. Cause like it doesn't affect that. That's not how anything is with any of like the CG.
Right.
And I'll say the visual effects in this, I thought were great. As far as I can tell, I thought they were pretty solid. I agree with you about the scale. I do agree there, but I would say like everything that looks cool is supposed to look cool.
Yeah.
for lack of a better way of putting it. At least I thought so.
Yeah. I'll agree with you there. And there's also a lot of different like creatures and designs in that, which is it's fine. That's where I saw some like little blemishes of CGI there. But it's and I'm gonna kind of speak a little bit out of my scope in that like I know that with big blockbuster CGI fests like this, there is the ever-present volume that Marvel Studios just uses as a crutch. And like I like in moments in this movie where we see like big wide vistas of Hollow Earth or the subterranean realm and like the different locations, I thought like, you know, it's noticeable, it's still noticeable that this is all just on like the volume, but like I don't mind it. Like here it's when it's in like the freaking quantum realm in Ant-Man that I'm like, okay, this is absurdly bad looking, and in Thor Love and Thunder too. But like here I'm like, you know, this is cool. Like it's serviceable, but still noticeable. So all that to say, I didn't mind the visual effects all that much, aside from the noticeable absence of the vibrant colors of Godzilla versus Kong, which were sorely, sorely missed, because this just felt more kind of basic, more like regular blockbuster stuff. How did you feel about the human characters in this movie? I like in particular the return of Rebecca Hall and Kayla Hoddle, and also Brian Tyree Henry, and the new inclusion of Dan Stevens.
Dan Stevens, yeah, Dan Stevens was my favorite of the human bunch. Mm-hmm. I think he's introduced, I think, to Kiss or something like that. That needle drops in this movie. Again, it's like MCU. It's like I just assume that's just. I can't even eye roll about it anymore because so many movies do this kind of thing.
Yeah,
that I'm just like, this has a few Lover Boys, another one. They do Day After Day is in the, later on this movie, the Badfinger tune. Anyway, there's like all these needle drops. Anyway, yeah. He's like in this helicopter and it's like, I was made for loving you, the Kiss song or whatever. Yeah. And, like he's having a good time. And yeah. I did like that. I will say the Wingard connection. I like him being in the guest, you know, 10 years ago, which is, Wingard's one of his earlier movies.
I'm an idiot and didn't even make that connection really.
Yeah. I mean, so it's just like, I kind of like that. Again, I'll take these movies. It's like I'll take any sort of bits of personality. I'll take anything. Yeah. I'll take crumbs, you know.
Oh yeah.
So like even some kind of connection there, and like he's having fun. Like he's sort of like a Zen figure a little bit. Mm. When they get down to Hollow Earth, he lets a mosquito bite him because he's like,
right.
Hey man, so he can like lay his egg. You know, stuff yeah. like that. It's just like that's so stupid. I mean, whatever. Mm. That's my perspective. But anyway, regardless, he's this sort of like Zen vet to the monsters, and
yeah.
I think that's a fun character. That's a fun addition. So I was cool with that. Brian Tyree Henry, I think take it or leave it. I think he's a strong actor, of course. I don't really, he's a conspiracy podcaster. Yeah. So whatever, you know, he'll sort of comic relief. I think they try to take him a little more seriously in this movie because he has a little more to do, but that's whatever. I thought the stuff with Rebecca Hall and what was her name? Kaylee Hoddle, you said the deaf girl who's like communes with Skull Island and then with like the Iwi tribe and stuff.
Yeah.
I think they're fine characters. I thought they were good in Godzilla versus Kong. I like their relationship because that's a carryover from Skull Island and like Rebecca Hall's characters, like her kind of surrogate mom. And I still like their characters this time around. The dialogue is just so bad between them. Like, and that really goes for any of the human characters in this. It's just like, what do they do that like thing? It's like, I'm with you, you're with me. And it's like, okay. Like, there's just nothing engaging about any of this dialogue. Right. And again, I know these sound like stupid complaints for like a monster movie, but like, I'm telling you, you can see the best of them and there's good stuff in this realm, even in writing and how you set up the circumstances. I mean, the stuff matters.
Absolutely.
Whether people think it does or not, when you're seeing a movie like this. So yeah, I mean, again, I mean, if I can say anything, I suppose that I liked actually in comparison to Godzilla versus Kong, where like Kyle Chandler shows up for like 4 seconds. Yeah. He's like laughably small a role in that movie. He's a holdover from King of the Monsters in that movie. Here, like they have a more streamlined cast, which I think actually probably helped the budget. So I honestly think that's fine. Quite frankly, I don't really, I think you only really need about 4 or 5 people to go down to Hollow Earth and do the thing.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's a problem with the cast. I really do just think it's a problem with none of the writing's good in this movie. I mean, let's just call it what it is.
Absolutely. So. And like, you don't need deep, rich characters for the humans, because that's not what audiences are coming to. And like, also, as evidenced by Godzilla Minus One, Toho's doing the character, like the human character stuff in circles, like around what, you know, Warner Brothers and Legendary.
That didn't have a cast that was like, oh, all these big A-list stars. I mean, even in Japan, you know, it's like, that's not the point of that movie, but it's still full of really strong performances. So, I mean, if anything, I guess I'm glad that this is such a terrible, cynical thing to say. Like, I'm glad it saved him some money. I mean, to be honest, like, you don't, like, that's why I kind of like King of the Monsters. I mean, I did like that in a way, it's such a weird thing to say, like, it's fun to see so many familiar faces in a movie like that.
Yeah.
But all that to say, like, you don't need it for this sort of movie either. And it's sort of take it or leave it for me with Godzilla, you know, X-Kong this time around.
Yeah. I agree. And I just wish that the that the actual Godzilla and Kong stuff were what was better, like better demonstrated and not as pushed aside, not pushed aside, but as competing with the human stories. Because like, yeah, the like you said, it is pretty much streamlined because we have a very small group of characters, but I still felt like the writing for them was lacking, and it was really trying my patience. Brian Tyree Henry, I think, was better than he was in Godzilla versus Kong because it is a little bit more taking it a little bit more serious, but he's not necessarily like the punchline of the movie. Like the fact that he's a podcaster or has any kind of internet
relevance.
There you go. Thank you. Any kind of internet relevance, like that's not the punchline of his character. The punchline is him reacting to things and trying to film things. And like, there are little quips here and there. Like there's one where he's hurriedly talking to Rebecca Hall and saying like, yeah, this is the stuff and everything. I had to pull in a lot of favors for my Discord server. And I was like, that's a very solid joke. I liked that. But the rest of the human element of the show, of the movie just kind of felt a little bit lacking to me, and more a vessel for the very long road to get to the setup to the final battle scene, which felt
Godzilla is not in this all that much.
He's
credited first in the title.
Yeah,
and he really does three main things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does. He does, and like that. That is also probably why it's not as colorful and unique and cool looking as Godzilla versus Kong, because we get some cool color stuff with him, but like, even when we'll talk about that in spoilers. But anyway, do you want to kind of dive into spoilers? I know we're going a little bit over our time.
Let's go for it.
Okay, yeah. So we are going to go into spoilers for Godzilla X Kong. Before we do that, Brent, what did you rate it on Letterboxd, and where can people find you online and your reviews?
I gave this 2.5 out of 5. I do think it's technically, you know, a bit of a step up from Godzilla versus Kong, but I still just, I'm kind of underwhelmed by these two specific ones. I think that honestly, King of the Monsters, like, I probably should have rated that a little higher because, like, in hindsight, it feels like that movie, like, but again, that's standalone, so it's sort of a different thing. But I think they still have a ways to go in figuring out how all of these creatures can really play together, but slightly better than if you like Godzilla versus Kong, you'll almost certainly like this.
Oh yeah,
I would say that. So
yeah, I'll agree with you there. I rated it slightly lower than you. I rated it 2 stars. Just the road to the finale was too cumbersome, and it had a lot of things that just didn't really work all that well for me, which I'll talk about in spoilers. One in particular that just kind of felt a little bit, you know, whatever. But as far as the humans are concerned, like there were some solid stuff there. Dan Stevens definitely stands out as he is the more just happy-go-lucky or the fun character. And like that also felt a little tropey to me. So that felt also a little bit like they didn't try hard enough with that. But he's having a blast, which I really appreciate because I like Dan Stevens. But I gave it 2 stars. And where can people find you online?
Awakeinthedark.com is the best way. That has all my written work, podcast stuff, and all the social media stuff.
Nice. All right. Well, we are going to go into spoilers for Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. If you want to navigate away from that to go to the secondary review, check the show notes for the timestamps to navigate around that. Those can also be found at obsessiveviewer.com/OV422. Now I'm going to play a clip from the trailer. When we come back, we're going to be spoiling Godzilla X Kong.
For centuries, there was harmony. The Titans were the guardians of nature, and the great apes became the protectors of humanity.
All right, so spoilers on for Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, and obviously the big thing that we need to discuss is King Kong's dental work. How did you feel about that? And also the themes of bullying that are explored in this with the Scar King,
yeah,
laughing derisively at
his dental work.
So
that whole thing, like the whole thing in the Hollow Earth, I do think is interesting. I think Scar King is a terrible name for a villain. Sorry if that's canon to Kong. I mean, whatever. Either way, I don't care if that's a character name that goes back 50, 60 years. That's a bad character name. Regardless, I think that's an interesting character. I thought his build, like, he looks a lot lankier. Like, he looks kind of like, I don't know. He doesn't seem like he would put up an actual fight with Kong. What he's able to do with Shimo and the Arctic Blast and everything hurts his arm. Like, I get that. But, like, even before, like, it's kind of like Batman and Joker in Dark Knight. It's like, it seems like two punches and the Joker will be, like, totally done. So this is where I was kind of getting the Planet of the Apes stuff. And again, I have not seen these new movies, but I, you know, just familiar just generally with them. In the zeitgeist, and I really like the way Scar King is presented with the kind of the bones that are almost like his regalia. It's almost like a sash, like you'd see on a general. So I thought that was super cool. And then the way he's able to use it, like as a whip almost. And then I know the control-y psychic skull for crystal or whatever for Shimo, whatever he's doing to controls it with pain is all we really hear about that. So that whole thing was cool. I just like the stuff with like the mini Kong. I looked up his name from my review, but I forget what it was. It's something cutesy.
Is it baby
but they
Kong?
Have like they it, I mean yeah, yeah that's basically what it is. There's some other name for it, and so it's a short name, but anyway, regardless, like it's sort of like, oh, at first, like he's kind of looking out for the other apes. And then like there's that scene, of course, where he like beats the other apes with the mini Kong, which is awesome. And then like they sort of they have a I don't want to say reluctant friendship, but I think mini Kong's someone related to him dies and Kong tries to avenge that. So they are kind of buddies from there on and all that. So that's fun too. Like, that's the stuff I engaged with the most, better or worse, is like the all of the ape stuff. And I said in my review too, like, I don't know, like, that's why I thought the visual effects stood out to me. Like, they're pretty expressive. Where again, I haven't seen these new Planet Apes movies, but like, it seemed like, I don't know if they did mocap or if it's just totally CG, but either way, I felt like, you know, they're telling a story with their faces. I liked that stuff the most. I thought those were the most, like, you know, Scar King, Mini Kong, all that stuff. Like, they, to me, were more interesting than pretty much any of the human characters, anything they were doing.
Oh, yeah, totally. Like, the emotive aspect of the creature characters in this was very solid. And I would be very curious to hear your thoughts on this after you see, like, if you plan on going back and seeing the more recent Planet of the Apes movies, because those kind of like spearheaded that. And I don't know, by the way, it's Zuko. The thing that I appreciate about that is the way that they went for conveying conveying the emotions and the interactions between the apes through just body language. Like, they didn't do a crutch of like having subtitles or anything. Cause like in the Planet of the Apes movies, they talk, like they speak English.
Right. That's a good point.
Yeah. And like, I do give this movie credit for basically believing in us as the audience to be able to pick up what they were putting down non-verbally, which I think that is a feather in the cap of the movie. Even if that whole segment, like the majority of the movie, was stuff that didn't really resonate with me all that much, I was glad that I could at least follow it and make that determination that it doesn't work for me, rather than being kind of lost in the shuffle or being like just completely disengaged by it. So I do think it's a feather in their cap for that, a feather in their mocap.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I kind of say, like, I mean, how much did Adam Wingard really have to do with, like, the storytelling decisions? Right. That's why I kind of have to credit, like, the VFX, I think, all the people that worked specifically on those scenes. Of course, any of the stuff with, Godzilla, with Destroyer or Mothra. I mean, there's a whole bunch of visual effects here that are quite wonderful. But I think specifically that aspect that kept me in the movie pathos-wise for, like, a lot of it. So... Mm-hmm. Credit to them. And nice. again, another reason why I said earlier, like, why can't we get a whole Kong movie of this?
Yeah.
Like, why can't we just have done that in 21 instead of Godzilla versus Kong? Do one other, like, just do a standalone Kong thing and then have your meetup. And then, anyway. And maybe it never would have worked. Maybe the meetup thing, because I don't think either of these have really worked in terms of the Godzilla with Kong, against Kong, any of that stuff. I don't really think it's worked, but at least it would have been nice to get one more standalone Kong movie, because I did Skull Island.
No, me too.
So anyway.
Yeah. I do think that the meetup between them, like, the movie has this weird thing where it feels like it is just like, it sets it up as like, okay, well, if Kong comes back from Hollow Earth, that could start like a massive war between these two, which, yeah, that's compelling. That's interesting. But it's also like, now there's an even bigger threat that doesn't look that big, but there's an even bigger threat that we need Godzilla and Kong to team up. And like, that in and of itself wasn't compelling enough for me. Even with Godzilla going and getting all the radiation to prepare for battle or whatever, like, none of that really, that just felt like the biggest slog. However, I will say that I think Godzilla sleeping in the Colosseum was freaking adorable.
I was thinking of that too, how it's said of cats, like that, you know, or the of lions or whatever, tigers, when they do something in nature that's like a domesticated cat, you know, people say tigers are just big kitties. That, even though Godzilla isn't, it just like reminded me, like, Godzilla, it reminded me of that line, and it's like, Godzilla is just a big kitty when he was curling up in the Colosseum. And I have family actually in Rome right now.
Oh, wow.
So I should have texted them and been like, get out, Godzilla is there. You know, so maybe if they don't try to go in the Colosseum, maybe they'll be okay. But but regardless, I agree with you. I mean, there's stuff with Godzilla that works, but I still think it's all the stuff with Shimo, it's all shoehorned. Like, it's,
that's why
King of the Monsters works for me, again, because it's standalone. It's a kaiju movie. Like, there's they're not trying to shoehorn really any Kong, tribal, anything with that. It's just a kaiju movie, and it's, I think, quite good is that. But they still just, again, like, they're like kind of 0-2 on trying to merge these worlds, and it's what they wanted to build. You know, they wanted to do the MCU thing and have a crossover, and sorry, crossovers don't always work. Justice League isn't always a good movie.
totally. Yeah. And like, that was another thing I kept thinking about too, is that for all of the movies in this franchise now and this TV show, like, while watching Godzilla versus Kong, I found myself, because it had been years since I'd seen the other ones, I kept thinking, like, man, if the groundwork of this movie, of this franchise, like the whole Monarch thing and the Apex, whatever, cybernetics or whatever, if any of that was compelling, I would be like all in. I would be really into it. But it just seems like it's a little bit piecemeal together. And then in this movie, you kind of, you don't necessarily abandon that, but you have instead the Iwi tribe and their connection with Jaya, which I wasn't totally against, because I appreciated how they mirrored Jaya's story with Kong's, and how they're both like looking for home and they're lost, and they're the last of their people, but they also found their a version of their people. And what kind of sucks about it is that it just kind of feels like a little bit Like, it doesn't go, it doesn't really conclude that in a satisfactory way. You have,
yeah, and it's just a thing where Wingard just does not, it's a sort of lip service. Like, he wants to sort of tell all this stuff, but it's not really about, like, bringing it together to be a meaningful story. It's just sort of throwing all this stuff out there. And that's why, I mean, look, I've liked some stuff Adam Wingard has done in the past. I love You're Next, and I think The Guest is really solid, kind of genre mashup sort of thing. But I don't know, since then, it just really feels like he has not found his footing, like, as a storyteller, quite frankly. So I don't know. I mean, I think moving forward, I have to say, I kind of hope they move past Wingard. I mean, you look at the directors, I mean, look like Gareth Edwards and Jordan Voight Roberts and, Michael Dougherty, especially with King of the Monsters. Like, you know, say what you will about those movies, but, like, they have intent to them in terms of, like, the storytelling sort of knack to them. And I think in Wingard, they're maybe just like, well, the Russos aren't good directors either, and they made Infinity War and Endgame, so try to figure it out. And he's like, oh, of course I can do that. I love Godzilla. It's like, that's not the way directors work. That's not the way directing should work anyway. Regardless, it's just, without comparisons to MCU even, it's just, I think, quite frankly, they just need to have someone, they need to back someone that can give these stories that just sort of oomph, whether that's, dialogue or just purpose, just something that's not just like, oh, well, monsters are going to fight in the third act. Doesn't matter what happens before that. It's like, it does, though. Like, it does. So,
absolutely. Yeah. And, like, that's why I say, like, I do like the kind of mirroring of Jaya and Kong, but, like, there's no follow through. It is all, like you said, lip service. It's basically just, like, oh, we'll have this be a big emotional moment at the end when Rebecca Hall is ready to give up her daughter to this subterranean group of people just for the fact that, like, they're her people. Like, it's just so, it feels very what is the opposite of, like, heavy-handed? Like, it feels very basic and rudimentary, and just,
it's perfunctory. Yeah. I mean, perfunctory, they don't know. I mean, they're kind of, and again, these are all characters that are carried over. So hypothetically, like, they should already have that development, and it's still there's just no real interest in furthering that story with them. It's just, like I said, that's kind of my hope for these, is whether they do Godzilla Kong mashup again, that's fine, but just have someone that can actually put these two worlds together in a way that makes sense. Cause they just don't for me in this one and Godzilla versus Kong.
I agree. We're on the same page there. Final thoughts. What did you think of the very, like, immediate Deus Ex Machina of the arm thing?
Oh, the beasts. Beast glove or whatever, right? The acronym that they didn't even say in the movie.
Oh yeah.
It was cute. Remind me of Pacific Rim with the elbow rockets and stuff. Mm-hmm. So again, like, that's kind of a kaiju thing. So, like, again, it's whatever. Like, I think on the next try, who knows? They'll get some of that stuff right and kind of make it make sense. I watched a ton of promos for this because I was watching March Madness this past weekend, and they advertised the crap out of this movie. Wow. And, like, it's obvious. Like, we know that they're gonna, like, we know the third act, we know what to expect, and it is fun. And that's all they're gonna advertise, of course, and that's fine. But again, I don't think it's too much to ask more of these movies.
Right. Totally agree. Any final thoughts on Godzilla X Kong equals friendship?
No, I don't think so. I think you could do worse with monster movies, but again, like I said, you could do better.
Yep. I agree. The final thing I'll say is, and I forgot to mention it before, is the pilot thing, like him getting eaten by a tree, like, that was fun for Brian Tyree Henry's reaction. But, like, the whole time I was thinking, like, oh, wow, this is wild, because, like, now they don't have a way to get back. And it's like, that's not a part of the movie at all. Like, it's just like Dan Stevens flies the thing and it's all set. I'm like, you could have had, like, a a compelling like human element to it and have that be a bit of propulsive tension, but they didn't. They left it in the
Oh my God, I do have one other thing to say because I have a diseased brain. So there's that sequence of like 3 minutes where the pilot gets eaten like very quickly. And then I think Brian Tyree Henry, I don't remember the exact details, he kind of freaks out. And then Dan Stevens like kind of hugs him in his like Zen way or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the story beats reminded me of Tropic Thunder. I don't think it's intentional at all. But it did remind me of like, what do you mean you people? You know, like, because it doesn't have anything to do with that in the movie, but just the sequence of events where in Tropic Thunder, Steve Coogan's character like lands on the like on the mine or whatever, and then they have to figure out what they're doing.
Right.
And then like, and it's so stupid. I shouldn't even have mentioned that, but I just was thinking of it, and then I was thinking, I don't know. I was thinking that Dan Stevens was going to start quoting the theme song from the Jeffersons. Yeah. No Jeez. Idea why I thought of any of this. There is no chance Adam Wingard was trying to reference that movie, but that's my last thing to say.
Nice.
That has nothing to do with anything.
Nice. Well, that will do it for our review of Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. Once again, you can find Brent's work on awakenthedark.com. Also, all the socials. I have links in the show notes, of course. And follow him on Letterboxd, whatever his Letterboxd username is.
It's just Awaken the Dark for Letterboxd.
There we go. But once again, all that's in the show notes of the episode. Brent, thank you so much for joining me for this review. Any parting thoughts before you leave and leave me to my secondary review of Upgraded?
No, you're going to get an upgrade here in the second half, so yeah. Enjoy it.
Don't butter them up too much, because I don't know how much I'm going to have to say about this movie. But not that it's bad, but I'll get to it. You guys will hear it. So anyway, thank you so much, Brent. Well, bid adieu to you, and we are going to go into my secondary review here momentarily. And of course, before we get into our secondary review, I just want to give a quick reminder that if you like the show, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review it on whatever app you use, and share our episodes on social media to help get the word out about the show. Now, on to the secondary review.
Tell me I view obsessively.
Look at that. This is actually a depiction of a swan. But what do you see? What do you feel?
I feel you don't live here.
Ronnie!
She could stay here, but I can't get a dog.
She's my sister. There's a difference.
Yeah, there's a difference. You can have sex in front of a dog.
Today's a big day for Anna. They're doing one of those big auctions.
If I want to work at a top art gallery, I gotta get a good recommendation. And there's no better recommendation than Claire DuPont.
Good morning, everyone.
All right. So for this week's secondary review, I'm going to be sharing my thoughts on Upgraded, which is streaming on Amazon Prime Video and is a romantic comedy. Let me go see it here. Okay. It's on Prime Video. It premiered on, what did I say? February 9th, I think. February 9th. The plot summary, courtesy of IMDb, is when Anna is upgraded to first class on a work trip, she meets handsome Will, who mistakes Anna for her boss, Claire. A white lie then sets off a glamorous chain of events, romance, and opportunity until her fib threatens to surface. Director for this movie was Carlson Young. Writers were Christine Lenig, Justin Matthews, and Luke Spencer Roberts. The cast includes Camila Mendez, Archie Renaud, Marissa Tomei, Lena Olin, Anthony Head, and Thomas Kretschmann. So I mentioned that I don't know how much I'm going to have to say about it. I did end up rating it 2.5 stars out of 5. So it's a step up from Godzilla X Kong, believe it or not, which is surprising. Now that, and I'm probably going to talk myself into a 2-star review of this, because I don't know if there's enough things memorable about it. So on Letterboxd, I wrote, the movie doesn't go too hard into the white lie spiraling out of control trope, and for that, I'm surprisingly pretty thankful. It gives way to some decent chemistry between the two leads and lets their charm shine through. It's still pretty cliche and low maintenance as far as rom-coms go. Funny enough, this would make for a really solid airplane movie, which that last line is my attempt at what the kids call humor. No, it does feel like it is this type of movie that could be very much easily consumed on a plane, like slightly distracted. You have other things on your mind, your destination. And it's an inoffensive rom-com. It is kind of the opposite of the Netflix rom-com I reviewed last month or in February, Players. This is an inoffensive rom-com in that it takes this trope. It takes this trope of two people who are like, it's an opposites attract scenario where one of them thinks the other is someone that they're not. And not even that he thinks that she's someone that she's not. It's more so that she tells him that she is someone she's not. So like she mentions, like she tells him that she is like the head of whatever in the art gallery world. And what I appreciate about it, as I said in the Letterboxd review, is that this movie doesn't harp on that. There isn't zany stunts to keep up appearances or keep up the lie. Like the premise of the movie is basically the work trip is she goes to London, And while she's in London, her boss, played by Marissa Tomei, is whisked away to Rome, I think. So she and Clara's, I think that was her name, right? She and her bosses, or it might have just been Clara. I can't click back. Claire, it was Claire. So she and Claire's other assistants are working together to basically get the ball rolling on this high profile art auction from some art dealers or art owners in London. And along the way, she meets and falls for Archie Renaud's character, William. They meet on the plane. And it's a typical meet cute. They bump into each other and she spills coffee on him. And it's very much the indicator of the opposites attract thing, or the two people of two different social statuses. Because the beginning of the movie is basically the beginning of the trailer. Is basically the opening scene of the movie where we learn that Anna is living with her sister and brother-in-law. Her brother-in-law is very much agitated and ready for her to leave. And she is just trying to make ends meet. Her goal, her wish, her dream is to become an art dealer and have her own art gallery, which feels like a perfunctory, cliched sort of rom-com thing that's like, okay, we need all of these set pieces, or we need all of the hallmarks of a romantic comedy. We need to have a woman who is not satisfied with her job, who is looking to get ahead in her job and has aspirations outside of her job or to excel in the workforce of her industry. But she has like a boss that's domineering. And this is where I am going to struggle a little bit with talking about it, because Claire as a character played by Marissa Tomei, she's great. She does this goofy accent that I don't remember if it ever pays off. Like, it feels like the movie introduces her and she has like this, I think, Italian accent. And then like there's a line of dialogue where I thought it was implying that, and maybe I just invented this in my mind, but I thought it was implying that like, oh, she's lying about her accent. She's not actually like Italian. She's just putting on airs. I honestly don't remember if that's resolved at all, but I just assumed that it would be because it's Marissa Tomei. I didn't know, because Marissa Tomei doesn't have an accent. I thought that they were just playing that up. But regardless, it does feel very much like a cliched domineering boss story. Like I saw it was either a Letterboxd review or it might have been a review on the IMDb page for it, but like the headline of it was "The Devil Wears Old Navy." And I thought that was freaking hilarious. Like, I thought that was more entertaining reading that headline for a review of this movie than the entirety of the movie. Because it is very apt. It is very much like a discount Devil Wears Prada. Granted, I say that with an asterisk because I haven't seen the Devil Wears Prada, but I know I'm talking in terms of the overall plot of and the vibe of the Devil Wears Prada. It feels very much like it is... influenced by that and a discount version of that at that. Plus the whole, that whole aspect, the biggest gripe I have for it, and probably the reason why I will waffle between 2 stars and 2.5 stars, is that the resolution of the lie and the way that the lie comes into play and comes to light, like, there are very much, there are hallmarks of this, the romantic comedy genre. There are conventions of the genre that should be adhered to. And here it just feels like they don't, as much as they don't rely on the drama of her lie to propel the story forward. Instead, it is more of a conventional meet cute between Anna and William, and it's her basically ingratiating herself in his family as they get to know each other deeper. And then there's also a lot of stuff with the auction that she's in London to do, that she's in London to help facilitate. And the way that those storylines kind of convalesce or coalesce dovetail together is pretty satisfying from a dramatic standpoint, but it doesn't feel like it has the dramatic oomph that it should. In fact, when we get to kind of the end run of the episode, like, or episode, Jesus, the movie, toward the end of the episode, when we get like what should have been the scene where William is confronting Anna and telling her, like, hey, you lied to me, you did this, like, they should have had a big blow up scene. That's played for a misdirect in a comic beat that doesn't land, because it is basically giving the movie a little bit of leeway away from having to deal with the drama of that. So I did think that the performances were pretty solid, I guess, for the movie it is. It was pretty solid in terms of the performances. Camila Mendes did do a good job portraying Anna, even if the script wasn't really there for her or didn't really do much for her or give her much room to really dive into the classic rom-com tropes and things that make this type of movie work really well for me particularly. So I don't know. One of the reasons why I was a little bit hesitant to review this movie, I was kind of wondering maybe I should pick another movie for the secondary review, but I pushed through and I'm doing this. But like, one of the reasons why was because I don't think this movie is very memorable. I'm not going to really think about it after I finish recording this episode. So it is what it is. So I guess I can kind of cut it down there now. I will say that Anthony Head, playing Julian Marks, he plays this artist who faked his death and as a means to get better sales on his artwork. I wanted more of him in the movie. He is kind of that... that cliched kind of big personality comic relief character. I wanted more of his character and his arc in the movie. I wanted him to have an arc in the movie instead of just being comic relief. I just wish that there was more to his character. So that is a non-spoiler secondary review for Upgraded. Once again, it is streaming on Amazon Prime Video. If you're weary of Amazon Prime having ads now, I will say that there was 2 pre-roll ads that played before the movie, and then I didn't have any ads the rest of the movie. So I don't know if I don't know if Amazon Prime has the ads set up to where if you're watching an original movie like Roadhouse or Upgraded, if it would just play the pre-roll ads and then let it play. And then if you watch anything else on Prime Video, it says like mid-roll ads. I don't know. I haven't watched anything on Amazon Prime that's not an Amazon Prime original. But if you are hesitant of that because of the ads, I saw it was a 60 seconds of ads at the beginning of the movie, and then it was smooth sailing from the rest of that. So anyway, once again, that's on Amazon Prime Video. Let me know what you thought of Upgraded. I'm not going to do a potpourri section for this episode because I haven't really watched that much of anything, really, in addition to all of this, but I will have more stuff next week, of course. So that'll do it for this week's episode of The Obsessive Viewer. As always, thank you so much for listening. And thank you to Brent for joining me for the primary review. Once again, check out his work at awakeinthedark.com and at Awaken the Dark on Letterboxd. And make sure to follow this show, The Obsessive Viewer, on social media and subscribe to the podcast on your preferred podcast app. Also check out Obsessive Viewer Podcast's other shows, Tower Junkies, a Stephen King podcast hosted by Tiny and myself, and Anthology, the Twilight Zone and Science and Classic Sci-Fi podcast hosted by me, which is going to be making a return very, very soon. Can't wait. I'm going to start playing myself out. So check out those shows. Also, more information at obsessiveviewer.com/podcasts. Next week on the show, I'm going to be reviewing Dev Patel's directorial debut, Monkey Man. And the secondary review will be for the documentary Girls State, which is going to be on Apple TV Plus on April 5th. So until then, thank you guys so much for listening, and I'll see you next week. And now, enjoy this short clip from a recent Patreon-exclusive episode. For the full episode and more Patreon-exclusive content, sign up at patreon.com/obsessiveviewer. Stanley Tucci is not in the movie that much. He's in the beginning of the movie, and then the entire movie is them trying to get into the city to confront him over this letter. So basically, he bookends the movie. He's in the beginning. We don't see him until the end. When we see him at the end, and when he and Eliza have that confrontation, like, Hope Davis does a great job throughout the entire movie. She's fantastic throughout the entire movie. Stanley Tucci is freaking amazing in this movie. His performance at the end of the movie is just wonderful, absolutely wonderful. And it does this really great thing where the movie basically creates this this villain character in Lewis. Throughout the entire movie, we are billing him as a villain. We are expecting Eliza to go confront him and then just like have like an empowering moment where she comes out ahead and everything is all good after the confrontation. And there's some of that. Thank you for listening to the Obsessive Viewer podcast. This episode was produced and edited by me, Matt Hurt. If you have feedback, thoughts on our episodes, or just want to connect, you can email me at matt@obsessiveviewer.com. For more information on this show, including a full archive of our episodes and show notes, visit obsessiveviewer.com. And if you enjoyed the show, please give us a follow on social media and subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice so you never miss an episode. Also, consider rating and reviewing the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Audible to help increase our visibility and grow our community. If you want to support the show and get early access to new episodes, as well as a steady stream of exclusive episodes, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/obsessiveviewer. For information on more podcasts presented by obsessiveviewer.com, visit obsessiveviewer.com/podcasts. Our theme song is A Little Mad Sometimes by As Good As It Gets. For more of their music, check them out on Spotify and at asgoodasitgetsmusic.com. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.